when I have my effect. We're holding the last line of Chokhayim and Beis. We said in the Mishnah that we have a case where the base, we have three members of the Beis Din. Well, we have two cases. One was where the entire Beis Din saw the new moon. Nobody else did. So two members of the Beis Din themselves become Edim, and everybody else is the Dayanim. And then we had another case where only three members of the Beis Din saw it, where then two of them stand up as Edim. They get two other, the one remains sitting as a Dayan. They bring two others to join him as Dayanim, because we said yesterday you need a minimum of three. And the two Edim and the two who stood up give Edus in front of the others. Which we said, by the way, yesterday, again, that the only reason we need Edus for these cases is because they saw it at night. If they'd seen the moon during the day and were able to be mekadesh it by day, they wouldn't even need Edus, because lo tehei shmiya gedola meri'ah, hearing it from the Edim is not any greater than actually seeing it themselves. Okay. So the Gemara says, Lamemra de Eid Nasadai. Now, we're seeing from our Mishnah then that somebody who actually witnessed something happen and could be an aid can instead be a dying. Because after all, everybody here saw it, whether we're talking the three or whether we're talking the entire base, then they all saw it, and yet we're saying that some of them are able to be dayanim. In that case, lema masnisim, deloike Rabbi Akiva. Would that mean that we'd have to say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva? The Tanya, Sanhedrin shiro echad jahara gesan nefesh, if the members of the Sanhedrin saw one person killing another, or any other thing where you need aiders to convict him and based him, Miktsasim nasu edim and miktsasim nasu dayon and divir Rav Tarfon. So Rav Tarfon says, what happens is then some of them serve as edim, the rest of them serve as dayonim, and therefore we're going to be able to convict the guy. We need edus. There we don't say loite shmiya gedola meri'ah, because after all you do need edus. By Kiddush HaChodesh, when you get down to it, you don't really need edus per se, because the Torah just says, Kazer re'ei v'kadosh. You have to see the moon in this phase, and then Hashem showed Moshe, and then you're mekadosh it. So it doesn't really specifically say that you need Edim, and in fact we've talked before about the shita of Rav Sadia Gaon, that for hundreds of years they didn't use Edim, but by Din Nefashos, definitely you need Edim. The Torah makes that very clear. So here, Rav Tarfon says, fine, some of them serve as Edim, the rest of them serve as Dayanim, and therefore you can convict the guy. On the other hand, Rav Tarfon Omer Kol Nas and Edim. On the other hand, Rav Tarfon says, no, you have a problem over here. All of them are suitable to be Edim, because all of them saw it the same way, the Ein Eid Nas a Dayan. And he says, somebody who saw something cannot be a Dayan on it. So in our Mishnah, when all of them, or three of them, as the case may be, saw the moon, on the face of it, all of them are Edim, same way as in that case, and according to Rabbi Akiva, we wouldn't be able to use what we're saying in our Mishnah to have some of them be Edim and the rest of them be Dayanim. So does that mean our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva? The Gemara says, no. Afilu Tamer Rabbi Akiva, you could even say our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Akiva. Ad kan like Amar Rabbi Akiva hasim ela b'dinin nefashos. You know what Rabbi Akiva is talking about over there? Is specifically when it comes to dinin nefashos. Then he says that somebody who saw something cannot be a Dayan on it. The Torah tells us that the Eda, meaning the congregation, meaning the Beis Din, has to judge him. The Hitzilua Eda, they have to try to save him. The Hitzilua Eda means that, so it talks about over there, you have a case of a Ritzeach B'Shgaga, where they save him from the Goyal Adam and send him off to the Irmikot. But more generally, we learn from that Beis Din has a responsibility to try and save the accused. They have to try to find any possible argument in his favor to exonerate him. So the kibin de chazyuhu de kotel nafsha, in this case that Rav Tarfon and Rav Akiva are arguing about, they actually saw him kill somebody else. They're not going to be able to find him a schus. Psychologically, the fact that they saw it, when we say eina dona shmiya l'ri'ah, part of that is, in other words, that seeing something has a much stronger impact on a person. So a person hears something. This is talked about in many places in Chassidus when we talk about the idea of hearing about a lakus versus seeing it, etc. That when you hear something, even if you know the Edim are 100% trustworthy, nevertheless, it's still like, you know, somewhere in the back of your brain, yeah, but maybe not. You know, you're not going to therefore throw out their Edus. You're still going to listen to their Edus, and if it makes sense, then you're going to accept it. But you're still, it doesn't have that same impact on you that you know for 100% for sure that it happened. Whereas when you see something, then you do. There's no way. You can't deny what your own eyes saw. And therefore, so now the Dayanim are not going to be able to do it. The Hitzilah Eda, they're not going to be able to come up with reasons to exonerate him. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva says that none of them can serve as Dayanim because all of them saw it. Avohacha, but here when you're talking about Eidus HaKodesh, you don't have that consideration. I feel it, Rabbi Akiva might, so even Rabbi Akiva might agree that it's fine for an aid to be a Dayan. Tosfos points out actually that you have several different categories in this. Given this concept of when we say aid not the Dayan and when not, there are actually cases in things that are banan. So you have like this. Tosfos explains. Eidus HaKodesh, so you have like this. When it comes to Dinin HaFoshes, again, we're saying, Rabbi Akiva says, and the Halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, that Ein Eid Nasa Dayan, anyone who actually saw the event occur cannot then be a Dayan on it, even if he's not standing up there and testifying, just the fact that he saw it is enough to disqualify him, because like we're saying, he's not going to be able to do the Vihitzilua AJ, he's not going to be able to find any reason to exonerate the guy. Then you have Eidus HaKodesh is also Daraisa, according to most opinions. Yet we're saying Eid Nasa Dayan, not in the sense that if he actually testified, but just in the sense that if he was capable of testifying. So in our Mishnah, we can't say, for example, that two of them will get up and testify, and then they'll sit back down and assume their role as Dayanim and sit together with the third one and be Mekadesh HaKodesh. That's why the Mishnah said you need two other people. But nevertheless, they can serve as Dayanim. They can serve as Eidim. And the third one who saw it, or the rest of the Beis Din who saw it, are able to serve as Dayanim even though they saw it, because they're not actually standing up there as Eidim. Then Tosfos points out, you have something called Kiyum Shtaris, where you have a Shtar brought to Beis Din, and you have to be able to validate that the signature is genuine, and there you have, there also you need a Beis Din for it. Then, because the whole concept of Kiyum Shtaris is Derabanan, then you're even able to, Tosfos says, you're even able to have the aid himself, who actually got up and then gave Eidus, then sit down and become a Dayan on that same Kiyum Shtaris and sign off that we validated that signature. Okay. So now we're done with the topic of Kiddush HaKodesh. We're going to revisit it briefly again in Perek Dalad. But for the most part, we're done with it now, and now we're going for the next from here until the end of the Masechta on the Dinim of Rosh Hashanah, where of course the main din of Rosh Hashanah is blowing the shofar, and therefore that's going to be the focus from here until the end of the Masechta is on the blowing of the shofar and the details of it. So first, we need to talk about what is a shofar. So the Mishnah says, "Kol ha-shofaris kshedim, all shofaris, whether from whatever kind of animal, are kosher." Chutz mishal parah, with the exception of a horn from a cow, mipnei shu keren. Because that one is not called a shofar, it's called a keren. Now, where does it say in the Torah to blow a shofar anyway? By Rosh Hashanah, it actually never says in so many words in Chumash anyway to blow a shofar. In Tilim, you have the pasuk tikkun b'chodesh shofar, which we've talked about a few times in the Masechta, which refers to Rosh Hashanah. But in Chumash, you don't have that. But in Chumash, what you have is by Yom Kippur of Yovel. It says, v'havarta shofar trua, that you should blow a shofar, and we're going to learn later on, we're going to learn that there is a gzeirah shava that tells us that Yom Kippur of Yovel and Rosh Hashanah are the same, and therefore that's how we know that when the Torah tells us that you have to blow something like this, on Rosh Hashanah, the Torah doesn't say actually to blow shofar, but it says to blow something. It says, Yom trua yilachem, or in a different passage, it says, zichron trua. So you have, there has to be a trua of some kind, but it doesn't say with what, but by Yom Kippur, it says a shofar, and we learn by gzeirah shava. So now, the point is, the Tanakhama of the Mishnah is saying that every other kind of a horn of an animal...
On Yom Kippur, it says trua shofar?
No, on Yom Kippur, it says v'havarta shofar trua. We're going to learn later on, we're going to learn toward the end of the Masechta that you have a gzeirah shava between that and Rosh Hashanah, where we learn all the dinim. We learn that they both need a shofar. We learn that they both need the order tkiya, trua, tkiya repeated three times. We're going to get into all that later on.
What's the basis of the gzeirah shava?
The basis of the gzeirah shava is, I think, the fact that it says trua by both of them. Yeah, by the fact that it says trua by both of them. But we'll get to that.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah. Okay, so the point is that any horn is called shofar, but the horn of a cow is only called keren. So therefore, it's not included in shofar. Tosfos points out, now you have another animal as well, a re'im, where its horns are spoken of as horns of a counter re'im, kind of. Tosfos says, okay, maybe those are not hollow. A shofar, you have to keep in mind that there's two kinds of growths that grow on animals' heads. You have horns, where you have there's a core inside of bone and flesh and whatever, and then around it is a layer of keratin, which is what the shofar is. So it's the same material that hair and nails and what have you are made of, but it's much, much thicker. That's the kind of thing we're talking about over here. Then you have, for example, deer and other creatures like that have antlers, which are solid bone. So those, Tosfos says, so maybe a re'im is the same kind, therefore it's possible for a shofar anyway, because by definition, shofar is related to the word shveferes, which means a tube, so it has to be something which is naturally hollow. When you take the horn off a goat or a ram or whatever creatures we're going to be talking about over here in the Gemara that are kosher for a shofar, then what you have is you take out that bony core and you boil the shofar, you do whatever, you take out that bony core, and then you have left the outside, the sheath made of keratin, and that's your shofar. So not when it's solid. The Ran brings up a question. What about if you have such a thing? What if you find such a thing on the head of a non-kosher animal? Now, we don't mean one that wasn't shechted. We mean a non-kosher species. So he says, maybe, fine, the Mishnah is not talking about over here, and neither is the Gemara. But on the other hand, we know as a general rule that only things from Tahar animals are able to be used for Melechus Shemayim. So he brings a suffix about it. Different poskim talk about it and say that you shouldn't use it, and that's the halacha that the Rebbe brings in Shulchan Aruch. You don't use it. Some of the achronim say the Mishnah Berurah says, for example, look, if you have nothing else, given that the Ran himself only said that it's a suffix, then use it and don't make a bracha on it. But one of the poskim, I forget who, I think maybe the Elyon Rabba, gives like six different levels. From highest to lowest of what's kosher and what's not, and the sixth one is one from a non-kosher animal where he says then blow it without a bracha. Now, the Altadeva doesn't mention any such thing, he just says flat out it's possible. Okay, so far we have, according to the Tanakhama, we have it has to be naturally hollow, so again, not like the antler of a deer or whatever, or like Tosfos says, the horn of a re'im. It can't be from a cow, and according to what the Ran is telling us, it can't be from a non-kosher animal. Amar Rav Yosi said Rav Yosi disagrees with one of those criteria. Balei kol ha-shofaris nikru keren. Rav Yosi says, what do you mean? All shofaris we find in the Torah are called by the word keren. Shenema bim shoch b'keren ayovel. When they were surrounding Yericho, the seven circuits, the 7 days, they're surrounding Yericho and blowing the shofar. The Torah, the pasuk describes it, that they're blowing with the keren ha-yovel. And yovel means a ram. The name of the year Yovel is called that, in fact, because they blow using a horn of a ram on it. So we see that the horn of a ram, which definitely is a kosher shofar, is called keren. So therefore, Rav Yosi says, by the same token, there's no problem using a horn of a cow for the purpose. There is a girsa, the Rif and some other Rishonim have a girsa where they bring the end of the pasuk, Kishamachemas Kola Shofar, where the same pasuk continues, when you hear the sound of the shofar, which shows, therefore, that the shofar and keren are synonymous, because the same pasuk is calling it keren and shofar. On the other hand, a little further, Tosfos deals with that and says that no, Tosfos actually says on that shtus lahakshus, it's silly to even ask the question why you're not bringing that. It shows just the opposite. It shows that a shofar is called a keren. You need to show that a keren is called shofar. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Shapir ka'amar Rav Yosi. So doesn't Rav Yosi have a very good point? It's true that all the shofars, for example, the one from a ram are called keren. So why are we excluding the one from a cow? So Rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan answer to that? They say, okay, what it is kol ha-shofar is ikru shofar v'ikru keren. All other shofars can be called both shofar and keren. We see, for example, that the horn of a ram, which again is the as we're going to talk about later, is the preferable type for Rosh Hashanah. So by Matan Torah, it mentions v'mshoich ha-yovel. So we see that it's again a horn from a yovel, from a ram. There's a famous thing that it was actually a horn from the ram from Akedas Yitzchak. And the pasuk also calls it shofar, by Hikola shofar. So you see that it can be called both keren and shofar. Depara, keren ikri, shofar la ikri. Whereas the Chachamim say, the one from a cow is only called keren, we never find it called shofar. Dichtiv b'chor shorei hodorloi, as the pasuk says, Moshe says it is bracha to shave at Yosef. The firstborn of his ox is a beauty for him. The kaunei re'em kaunav, and he has horns like the horns of a re'em. So we see that the horns of an ox and of a re'em, for that matter, are called horns. They're called kerem. There's no pasuk where they're called shofar. Therefore, the chachamim say it's disqualified. V'Rav Yosi Amalach. Now, what would Rav Yosi answer? He would say, "Oh, you know what? The Paranami Ikru Shofar. As a matter of fact, I'll find you a pasuk where a cow's horn is also called shofar. Dichtiv, a pasuk can tell him, V'sitav Hashem Mishur Per. Let my tefillah be better to Hashem, more acceptable to Hashem than a shur par. Now, a shur par, the simple sense, means a shur means an ox, and par also means an ox. The difference is, though, that shur means a newborn animal. And par, as we learned previously, amdaf yud, means only an animal that's reached a certain age, 3 years old. So we're talking about a shur over there, but in shur lama par being par lama shur, what do you mean? What is the creature that we're talking about where David is asking that his tefillah should be better than a korban of it? If it's a shur, if you're saying shur, then why say par? Again, where shur can imply even when the animal was first born, par implies when it's 3 years old, being par lama shur. So why the double expression where one of them implies an animal of any age and the other one an animal of only 3 years older? So we have to put the words shur par together, and we get the word shofar. The fact is, though, the pasuk in the simple sense is talking about a cow or a bull, an ox, whatever, and then calling it shur or par. But by the fact that it says shur par, we darshan that it means shofar. Which the Rashash points out, by the way, it's not as strange as it sounds, because you have various words in Tanakh where actually you have an extra resh stuck in the middle of the word that doesn't necessarily belong there. You have, for example, the word shayvet, like shayvet azahav, comes from the word shevet, where there's no resh in it, but then it's added in the word shayvet. There's of the city of Damesek, for example, there's a place in Tanakh where it's called Darmesek, and so forth. So sometimes you have a resh is stuck in there. So he says the same thing over here. Shur par equals shofar. So you see that the horn of a cow is called a shofar. V'Rabbanon, what did the Rabbanon answer to that? Kedirab Masna. They say, no, you have to understand that pasuk the way that Rav Masna understands it. The Amar Rav Masna, my shur par shu gadol kapar. What is this shur par that we're talking about in the pasuk? Is it means a shur that was newborn but was as big and fully developed as a par. Namely, we're talking about the first shur that Hashem created by Maase Bereishis, whereas we learned previously on Daf Yud Aleph, we said everything that was created in Maase Bereishis became Masa Nivru. They were created in their full height and their full development. So there was an ox that Hashem created by Maase Bereishis, and afterwards other Bereishis brought it as a korban. So therefore, so David is saying, I'm asking that my tefillah should be more beloved and more acceptable by Hashem even than other merchants' korban, which was the very first korban that anybody ever brought. So that's why it says shur par, the Chacham's day, not to tell us anything about a shofar. Okay. Next, Ula Omar. So Ula says here's a different reason why the Chachamim say you can't use a horn of an ox. Now, a number of the Rishonim, the Rashba, and others explain that the Gemara, that Ula is still bothered by, we're saying because a horn of a cow is only called Keren, that's kind of a weak reason by itself. So therefore, the Gemara wants to, so therefore Ula, and we're also going to have soon, Abaya, are going to give other reasons that are like the more primary reason, and then by the way, there's also the fact that the horn of an ox is only called Keren. So Ula Omar, Hainu Taima de Rabbanan, the reason why the Rabbanan say you can't use a horn of an ox, Kedir Rav Chista, is based on what Rav Chista said. The Omer Rav Chista, Mepnei Ma En Kohen Gadol Nichnas B'Vigdei Zahav Lefnai V'Lefneim Lava Davoida, why doesn't the Kohen Gadol wear his golden clothes when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to do the Avoida? As we learned back in Yoma, he changes into his Vigdei Lavan both times, all times, actually it's four times, that he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Why? The reason is because a prosecutor can't become a defender. Gold is going to remind Hashem, so to speak, of the Chet HaEgel, which was made out of gold. So therefore, so we don't want him wearing the golden clothes in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now, when it comes to a shofar, the same thing. The shofar, if you're going to make a shofar out of a cow's horn, it's going to be reminiscent of the ego, which is the same species. An ego, after all, is a baby cow. And therefore, it's going to create a kitrug. And the whole point is that the Kohen Gadol's avoda in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah are meant to be a defense for the Jewish people. So therefore, you don't want things that had to do with the ego. So they're going to ask the lawyer. Really? You're telling me that not? Well, you could dam par. One of the times the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's bringing with him the blood of the par that he shechted. So we see that. There's no problem bringing something of a par in there. The answer is the Gemara says, okay, come on. Hoyover ishtini ishtini. Once it was changed, once it's blood, it's not recognizable anymore as a par, then there's no problem bringing it into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We just don't want him going in with something that blatantly looks like something from the Egel. The Gemara says, "Va'ika orin v'kaporis akruv." What about in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? You have the orin, which was plated with gold, which was covered with gold. It had two golden boxes. You had the kaporis, which was a slab of gold, and the kruvim, which are also made out of gold and made in one piece with the kaporis. So those are made out of gold, and those are in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, the Gemara says, "Chote bar Yakruv kamminin." What we mean is that the chote should not be offering something in the Kodesh HaKadoshim that has to do with the Chet Egel. So therefore we don't want him wearing golden clothes, because that's going to remind him of the Chet Egel. Whereas over here, he's not offering anything with the Oren and so forth. They're sitting in there. They're the furniture in there. So that's not a problem. The Gemara asks, for Ika Kafel Machta. What about you have the spoon and the pan, which he brings in there, which we learned in Yuma, that the spoon in which he brought in a pan full of coals, he brought in a spoon full of k'turis, and then we said he transferred the k'turis from the spoon into his hands and sprinkled it over the coals, and those were both made out of gold, and there he's using them for offering. The answer is okay, chote by snor kamenim. What we mean is that the chote, the one who did the avera, should not be beautifying himself with the object that was used for the avera. So therefore, so for the Kohen Gadol to wear the golden clothes, those make him beautiful. Therefore, we don't want those in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now, when it comes to shofar, we can say then that, according to the first possibility, a shofar is not a korban per se, but we're using it for the mitzvah itself, and therefore that would be therefore we don't want one from an egel. The Gemara is going to ask soon that a shofar is not on the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We'll get back to that. And according to the second possibility, chote by snur, Tosfos points out that by the shofar, you're misnur, you beautify yourself, you enjoy kind of the sound of the tekiya. So we don't want that. So the Gemara says, the fact is, the rest of Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is serving in Bigdei Zahav. If you're saying that Zahav is off limits, then he shouldn't be wearing it at all. The Gemara says, okay, maybe Fnim Kamin. We're talking about only things that are in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There we don't want the gold. But outside, elsewhere in the Bais Mikdash, no problem, even on Yom Kippur. The Gemara says, Shofar Namim Bachotzu. No, the Shofar doesn't take place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So what's the problem? The answer is, Kivin de Lezikoren Hu. Since the Shofar is coming, that Hashem should remember us for good, as we learned previously on Daf Tzayin. Hashem says that say before me Malchias, so that you're crowning me as king, Zechronis, I should remember you for good, and how through the shofar. So the shofar comes to remind Hashem of the good we've done, and of how we accepted the Torah by Matan Torah, and all kinds of other things like that. So therefore, it's coming for Zikoren. So therefore, Kibifnim Dun. So it's the equivalent of being inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Tosfos points out that Ephod and the Choshen are also coming for Zikaron, but there the Zikaron is not so much the gold they're made out of, it's more the names of the Shvatim that are engraved on them. And the names of the Shvatim are not engraved on gold, they're engraved on precious stones, so therefore that's not a problem. Okay, so the Gemara says, what is Ullah bringing us a different reason, this whole business with En Kateger Nasas Aneger, Vahot Tanim Apneshu Keren Karma? The Mishnah clearly gave us a reason why you can't use a horn of an ox, because it's called Keren. So why is Ullah giving us a different reason? The answer is Chod Avod Karma. You're right, according to Ullah, the Mishnah is saying, here's a reason, and here's another reason. Choda de En Kateger Nasas Aneger. The main reason is because of this En Kateger Nasas Aneger. But Oid, and another reason, is Mepeshu Keren, because it's only called Keren. again, like we said, the Rishonim explained that the Tanakhama would say, Ula would say that just the reason of Keren by itself is a weak reason to ban a whole category of horns, and therefore better to assume that there's another reason as well that wasn't mentioned in the Mishnah. So what does Rabbi Yossi answer to that? Omaloch, he'll tell you, the problem that Ula is bringing up, that a horn of a cow would be a kategor, would remind of the chet egel, no problem, that only applies inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is why you can't bring gold there. V'hai shofar v'chutzu. The fact is, the shofar is outside. Yes, we're saying before that it's lezikara and therefore it's life b'fnim. Rabbi Yossi says, never mind that. The fact is, it's not b'fnim. Therefore, the same way as there's no problem for the Kohen Gadol to wear the big day zahav most of Yom Kippur, the same way, or parts of Yom Kippur anyway, the same way there's no problem with a shofar made out of a cow's horn. And as far as the argument in the Mishnah that it's called a Keren, again, like he said before, Kol HaShofar is Nami, Iku Keren, every other shofar is also called Keren, and therefore he says that's good enough. And like we said before, he has his pasuk from Shofar to show that even the horn of an ox is sometimes called shofar. So therefore, he says the fact that a horn is called Keren is not enough to disqualify it. Abaya Omer, Hainu Taimai Drabonon. Abaya says here's a different reason why the Chachamim don't like a horn of a cow. Shofar, Amar Achmana, v'loi shnayim v'shloisha shofars. Because the Torah says you have to use a shofar, implying one shofar, not two or three. So we're going to learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, on Chaf Zayin Amud Beis, that, for example, there are dinim about if you take one shofar and put it inside another one, what are the dinim? In some cases, it's possible, because then you hear the sound of two shofars together. So now, v'hod depara. Now, what happens is, Abaya says, the horn of an ox, kiven dekoi gildi, it's made out of layers on top of layers. Unlike, you can tell, you have like a new layer grows on it every year. Unlike the horns of other kinds of animals. Now, the other kinds of animals, maybe they grow in layers also, but they're not as distinct. When you look at a regular shofar, you don't notice layers. Maybe you could look at it under a microscope or something, but at least when you look at it with your eyes, you don't see layers on top of layers. With a cow's horn, you do. Therefore, it looks like two or three shofars. So therefore, the Chachamim don't like it. So the Gemara says again, v'hotanim apneshu keren kama. The Mishnah didn't say any such thing. The Mishnah said, because it's keren. The answer is again, like we said before, chodav o'od kama. According to that, the Mishnah would be telling us, the Tanakhama is telling us two reasons. One stated, one unstated. Chodav, one reason I don't want it, the shofar achodam rachmona v'le shnayim v'shloisha shofaris. Because you have to have one shofar, not two or three. V'oid mepneshu keren, and another reason, because it's called only keren. Now Rabbi Yossi has an answer to both those things. He'll tell you, this that you're saying it has to be one shofar, not two or three, fine. But here, that's not a problem. Since they're all attached together, it's not like when you take one shofar and put it inside another, they didn't grow together, they're not attached together. So then you can talk about that there are problems with that because the sound is coming out of both of them. But over here, they're all attached together. Chadu, then it's really one shofar. Okay, it looks like it has different layers. So what? Udka'amad neshu keren. And as far as the other problem, that's called keren. Kol ha-shofars nami iku keren. I'm telling you, all other shofars are also called keren. And that's not enough to disqualify them. So neither is this. Okay. The halacha is like the chachamim. Therefore, shofar of a cow is possible. As far as shofars from other kinds of animals, we're going to talk about that more on Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, now, all this time we've been working on the assumption that Yovel means, besides for the 50th year, that Yovel means a ram. And therefore we were saying, when it says, Vimshoch b'keren ha-Yovel, then it means a horn of a ram. And the same thing, other psukim that we brought in that connection, that Rashi brought, where it says, Vimshoch ha-Yovel, and so forth. So let's analyze that. My mashma, dahai Yovel, lishna de dichrahu. Where do we see, that the word yovel means a ram. So Tanya, Omer Abakiva, Shalachti La'arvia, when I went to Arabia, the Pashtus, there were Jews living there, and Abakiva went to visit them, Hayukurim, Ledichra Yovela, their word for a ram was Yovela. So we see, therefore, we can learn from their language that the word yovel in Tanakh also means a ram. And since we're mentioning that, the Gemara digresses to talk about several other things where we see that a word in another language tells us something about a word and explains for us a word in Torah. So for Omer Rav Akiva, Kshalachti LeGalia, Rav Akiva says, when I went to Galia, now Galia was the Latin name for France. So it's possible that it means that Rav Akiva traveled all the way to France. There may well, the Pashtus, there were Jews there by that point who had been brought there by the Romans or went there on their own or whatever. There is also, there's an area in the middle of Turkey that in the olden days was called Galatia, and the Romans also sometimes called it Gallia, so it might mean that. Maybe Rav Akiva didn't travel quite as far as France. Maybe he only went to this area in Turkey. Whatever it is, he says, when I went there, Hayukurin the Nida Galmuda. Their word for Nida was Galmuda. So what does that word mean? We can understand it in terms of Lashon Kodesh or Aramaic. My Galmuda Gmula Dami Baila. It means it's an acronym for the words. This one, Gmula, means separated, like Vayigdal Yala Vayigoma, when a baby is weaned. Duh, this one is separated me Baila from her husband. So that's what the word Galmuda comes from. Why is it important to know? Tosfos points out that there's a pasuk that uses the word Galmud in connection with Chanefim, in connection with people who flatter Rishoyim, ki adas chonef Galmud, and the Gemara learns from that in Sota that people who flatter a Rasha and tell him you're doing good, when really they should be telling him off for what he's doing wrong, are as disgusting as a nidya. So therefore, it's important for us to understand what the word Galmud in that pasuk means, and now we understand from what Rabbi Akiva is telling us that it means a nidya. Next, Va'amar Rabbi Akiva, Shalachti la'Afriki. When I went to Afriki, which could mean Africa, or again, there's an area of Turkey that used to be called Phrygia, so it could conceivably mean that. Anyway, Hayukurin la'Ma'aksita. Their word for a ma, which is a small coin, one sixth of a dinner, was ksita. Their word for it was ksita. L'may nafimina, so why is that important for us to know? L'furushi mea ksita, daraisa mea danki. Now we understand when it says in Parashas Vayishlach that Yaakov bought a piece of land in Shechem and paid for it 100 ksita. Now we understand what a ksita is. It means, so now we understand mea ksita means mea danki, 100 mois. So there were 20 ma to the shekel, because the pasuk tells us that esrim geira shekel, and a geira is another word for a ma. So it means that he paid 5 shkolim for the place. Why in turn is that important to know? There's an interesting Rashi sicha on this in Chelet Kopei, where it ever goes into it. So Rashi brings this point about ksita meaning a ma, and he brings this gemara over here with what Rabbi Akiva says, and the Rebbe has a bunch of questions on it, why Rashi preferred that explanation rather than there are several other possibilities what ksita is, and why does he have to bring what Rabbi Akiva, why does he have to bring Rabbi Akiva's name, and so on and so forth. And the gist of the explanation is that the word ksita means also, it's Maloshin Kishut, it's the kind of small coins that people can use for decoration. So in other words, Yaakov not only paid, he could have paid 5 shkolim in like the way we pay for Pidyon HaBen or something, 5 large coins. Instead, he preferred to give it to them in the form of 100 ksita, because these are small coins that are suitable to be used as jewelry. And therefore, that showed us chavivos, that right away he comes into Eretz Yisrael, and he right away wants to buy a plot of land there, and pay for it with something over there that can be used for beauty, even though he's not going to be living there for any length of time. He's only camped there temporarily in Shem. And then the Rebbe goes on to talk about that the reason why this is associated with Rabbi Akiva, it shows the greatness of the Jewish people, which Rabbi Akiva was always looking to show that. And in fact, in a footnote there, the Rebbe says, we can understand that when Rabbi Akiva says that when I went to Afriki, it comes out that the purpose of him going there was in order for him to learn this point, that he could use to be Melamed Schus on the Jewish people. So even though B'Pashtos, we would think he had other reasons to go there, to visit the local Jews or whatever, really B'Pnimius, it was in order that he should learn this point and have something to be Melamed Schus on the Jewish people. Next, Omar Rebbe, Tralachti L'Krakei Hayan. Rebbe says, when I went to the cities near the sea, the overseas city, Hayukurin the Mechira Kira. Their word for selling was Kira. So Lamai Nakamina, why do we need to know that? Leforushi Asher Karisi. Now with that, we understand the Pasuk in Parashas Vayechi, when Yaakov says, or actually when Yosef quotes Yaakov as saying, when he's speaking to Pari, and he quotes Yaakov as saying, that I want to be buried in Ma'oros Machpelah, Asher Karisi Li. So like this, without that, we would have understand Karisi Meloshen Kiyichre Ishbur. That means I dug it. But what do you mean? Yaakov didn't dig out Ma'oros Machpelah. It was there already. So it means Asher Karisi Li, that I bought for myself. As we have, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk that Yaakov had to give a huge amount of gold and silver to Esav to buy his rights to be buried in Ma'oros Machpelah. Now we have, so far we have Rabbi Akiva and Rebbe who traveled to different places and learned from them different words that words in other languages that illuminate something for us in Torah. So now we have more. Amar Rav Shimon ben Lachish, Kshalachti l'Tchum Kan Nishraya, when I went to Tchum Kan Nishraya, the name of a place, Hoyu Koren L'Kala Ninfi V'Latanagol Sechdi. Their word for a kala was Ninfi, and their word for a rooster was Sechdi. So, Lakala Ninfi Mikra, what's a posik that now we understand as a result of that? The posik calls Yerushalayim, Yefei Noif Mesois Kala'aretz. The beauty of Noif, the joy of the whole world. So now we understand the word Noif is related to the word Ninfi, so it means Yerushalayim is as beautiful as a Kala. And Velatanagel Sechi, what do we get from that? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, the Boisem and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Mikra, what's a posik? Mishos Batuchos Chama. Who is it, meaning of course it was Hashem, that placed Chochmah in the Tuchos? The word Tuchos literally means smooth. It refers to the kidneys. We know throughout Tanakh and throughout the Gemara, the kidneys are understood to be the place where a person comes up with ideas and decides what to do and what not to do. That's where we have, for example, both in Kloyus Valev, where Kloyus means the kidneys. So who placed Chochmah in the kidneys? One idea that I once saw is, to put it in modern terms, the kidneys are what filter your blood. So therefore, in other words, like the kidneys metaphorically filter a person's thoughts and decide what's good to do and what's not to do. Anyway, so who did that? It is Hashem. Oy minasa masechvi dina, or who gave understanding to the sechvi. So now we understand, based on what Rish Lakish found out, that the word sechvi means a rooster, and therefore it means who is it? It's Hashem who gave understanding to the rooster, and this is when we say in morning brachas, anoisa masechvi dina lahavchin ben yom ben loyla. So that means that Hashem gave the rooster the understanding to be able to distinguish between day and night. With that said, by the way, there is a different explanation. Some of them are Mefarshim on the Pasuk, but they explain that the word Sechvi means the heart, and they understand the Bracha in the same way also, that it means that Hashem gave the human heart understanding to be able to distinguish between day and night. So Mishos Batuches Chochma Elukloyus, the word Mishos Batuches Chochma refers to the kidneys. Oimi Nasam Sechvi Dina as a town ago. So now we understand what the word sechvi in that pasuk means. There is an explanation on this Gemara, a short explanation from Rav Levi Yitzchak in the middle of one of his notes on the Zohar, where he explains this Gemara in Kabbalah Osius, which are a little hard for us to understand. But there's a sicha years later where the Rebbe talked about it and brought it down into something about Voida and related to something that the Tzemach Tzedek talks about in Yahel Ur on the pasuk Yifei Neuf Mesos Kol Aretz, where he associates it with the Avodah of Tshuva. That you have the Kala there, the Kala Yifei Neuf Mesos Kol Aretz represents Malchus. The Sechvi represents Bina, as we're saying over here, Minasam La Sechvi Bina. The idea is Tshuva, the process of Tshuva involves reattaching Malchus to the higher spheres, as it talks about in the Geras of Tshuva. In particular, Bina is associated with Tshuva Ilah. And the word noif for the kala, the word ninfi or noif for the kala, is actually related to the word tnufa, which means to raise up. So the process of tshuva involves raising up the kala, raising up malchus, and bringing her to bina, and that's the idea of avodas tshuva. And it also talks about over there why specifically he found this out in Tchum Kan Nishraya, that also has to do with the avodah of tshuva. Among other things, the word tchum is the same letters as choisem, a seal, like you have the sealing that Hashem does for us on Yom Kippur. Okay. More on this topic of words that the Chachamim didn't understand until they found out some more information. Levi Iklalahu Asra, Levi one time, the famous Talmud of Rebbe, one time visited a certain place. Osa Gavril Kamei, a man came to him with a complaint. Omale, the guy says to Levi, Kva'an Planya. Plony Kva'an. So Kva'an means he did Kava to me. So the Nun means to me. But Levi didn't understand what the Shodesh Kova means. Literally, Kova means like the Boya Mezuzah. It means like to fix something in place. But obviously, that's not what the guy means. So Loi Haba Yada, my Kamalai. So Levi didn't understand what the guy means. Also, showed by Medrash, so he went to ask by the Beis Medrash. Omar, Omrule, so they told him in the Beis Medrash, what he means is Gzolon Omalach. What he's saying is, that guy stole from me. The word Kova is a Shodesh that means to steal. As you have a pasuk in Malachi that says, can a person steal from Hashem? And yes, the pasuk continues, v'amartim, and you say, v'amek v'anucha, and yet the pasuk says, you are kovim, you're stealing from me. So you say, how are we stealing from you? Hamaisa v'atruma, that you're failing to give maisa and truma to the kohenim, to the levim and the kohenim, and in that way you're stealing from Hashem, so to speak. So therefore we see from that pasuk that the word kova means to steal. The Rashash, by the way, makes an interesting point. Levi wasn't familiar with that pasuk, but he didn't know. He had to ask him the Beis Medrash. So he says there's actually a story in Masechet Yevamos where Levi, and there's also a variant of the story in the Yerushalmi, that Levi was appointed the Rav of a certain city called Simonia, and because they started asking him a bunch of questions in Halacha and in Agadah and whatever, and he didn't know the answers. And when it turns out that the people complained to Rebbe, they said, you sent us Levi to be our Rav, and he doesn't know anything. It turned out because they had given Levi such covered, therefore he felt a tiny bit proud, he felt a tiny bit of gaiva, and that caused him to forget his Torah. So the Rashash says maybe this story happened at the same time. Maybe at the same time, this guy came over to him with this complaint, and because, again, Levi had felt that tiny bit of gaiva, therefore now he doesn't have the ability to give the answer where normally he would have. However, the Gemara says, why did Levi need that? If I had been there in Levi's position, I wouldn't have had to go ask in the Beis Medrash. Fine, I might not have known what the Shodesh Kova means by myself, but I would have figured it out from context. I would have started asking him, Heichi Kova, how was he Kova you? The Mai Kva, with what was he Kaveh you? The Mai Kva, why was he Kaveh you? And then based on his answer, then I'd understand, Umela Habiyadina. Then based on his answers, I'd figure out from context what he's talking about. So why didn't Levi do that? The Gemara says, "Ihu sava milsa di isura kamalei." Because Levi thought that the guy might have been talking about that he did some kind of isur to him. So therefore, it's not the kind of thing where you can ask, how he did it. He did it. He did an isur. It could even be something that's some kind of improper thing like Mishkav Zohar or whatever, where you don't really want to get into the details so much. So therefore, Levi, not knowing what the word kava means, where it could even mean that, then he didn't want to ask such leading questions. So therefore, instead, he went and asked the Beis Medrash, and now he found out that it means the guy stole from him. Okay. More on this topic of things the Chachamim didn't know until they found out more information. Loi habu yadi rabban and mai sirugin. The Chachamim of Rebbe's Beis Medrash did not know what the word sirugin means. We learn in Masechet Megillah, we're going to learn in another month or two, Beth Hashem, that you're able to read the Megillah Sirugin, that if you read the Megillah Sirugin, then you're Yotze. So what does the word Sirugin mean? Shamu'la Amsa Debei Rebbe, but one time they heard the maid of Rebbe, the maid servant in Rebbe's household, the Chazasnu Jabon and the Havu Ayli Pasti. One time she saw that the Chachamim are entering a few at a time. They're not all going into the Beis Medrash together. You have a few are coming in, and then a few minutes later, a few more, and so forth. And Omrulhu, and she said to them, Admata Ate Mechnosim, Sirugin, Sirugin. How long are you going to keep on coming in? Sirugin, sirugin. In other words, you should all come in at once. So now they understood that sirugin means piecemeal. So in the case of the Megillah, it means if a person read the Megillah piecemeal, so he read a pasuk, then he paused, then later on he read another pasuk, so then he's still yotze. Similarly, loy habu yadid abon and my chalugluguys, the Chum didn't know what chalugluguys are, which we learned in Yuma that during the 7 days before Yom Kippur, since we need the Kohen Gadol to be Tahor for Yom Kippur, we don't want to have him eat things that could potentially make him become a Balkari. Tosfos points out also when it comes to a Zob in the same Gemara over there, we don't want to have him eat things that potentially could make him a Balkari, which is going to ruin his count of the seven clean days after Ziva. So one of the things we're not supposed to have him eat is Chalugluguys. So the Chum didn't know what that was. But one day they heard Rebbe's maidservant, the Chazislahu Gavra, the Kamabadr, Parfachine, she saw a guy was scattering or peeling or whatever, Parfachine, which is a vegetable they could recognize. That's so the Rashi gives a translation of it in French. In English it has a name called Portulac. It's a plant related to parsley. So Omrale, and she says to him, why are you scattering your chalugugos? So now they understood what chalugugos is. They understood that it's this plant which they could recognize. Also, loy have a yadir abanan mai salsaleho usremeka. The chachamim of Rebbe Yeshiva did not know what the word salsaleha in a pasuk means. So salsaleha literally means, it's referring to the Torah. It's saying salsaleha, grab onto it and turn it over and over, and you're going to keep on finding. And the pasuk continues to usremeka, and it will elevate you. So they didn't know what the word salsaleha means. One day they heard this maid servant of Rebbe. She was saying to a certain man who she saw turning over and combing and curling his hair. She tells him, how long are you going to be masalsal your hair? So now they understood that what masalsal means, doing with the turtle, like what this guy was doing with his hair and turning it over and being involved a lot with it. Another one, Loi Habu Yadi Rabbanan Mai Vitehab Matate Hashmade. There's a pasuk in Yeshaya, a Nevuah, that Babel, that Hashem is going to completely destroy the city of Babel, and Hashem says Vitehab Matate Hashmade, I will sweep it with the broom of destruction. So they didn't know what the word tetetia and matate in that pasuk means. One day they heard this maidservant of Rebbe's household, to have us amr l'chabata. She says to one of her fellow maids, shkuli tatisa v'tati beisa, take a broom and sweep the house. So now they understood that the word matate and the word tetetia means a broom. So it means Hashem is saying, I'm going to sweep it with the broom of destruction. It's going to be absolutely, completely destroyed, like the way you sweep a floor and there's no dirt left. By the way, we see from this Gemara that this Amta de Beir Rebbe was quite smart. We have a few other places in Shas also where it brings things from her that she knew to tell the Talmidim to act the right way. We learned in Erevin, for example, there were certain like code phrases that she would use when she wanted the Talmidim to stay or when she wanted them to go, and different things like that. And even at the end of Rebbe's life, it tells about in Ksubas how she was the one who brought about the circumstances that Rebbe shouldn't have to suffer anymore, that he should actually be able to pass away. So she distracted the Chachamim for a moment, the whole story over there in Ksubas, but we see that she was a very faithful servant of Rebbe. Another one, Loi Habu Yadi Rabban and Mai Hashlech Al Hashem Yehovcha Vuhu Yechalkalacha. The Chum didn't understand. When you have the Pasuk in Tehillim, throw your Yehov on Hashem and he will support you. What is the word Yehovcha? But Rav Barachana says, I'll tell you how I found out. One day I was traveling with a certain Taya, with a certain Arab, to have a Darina Tuna. I was carrying a burden, I was carrying a bundle. But Amalin, he tells him, Shkil Yehovich v'shodi agamloi. Take your Yehov and throw it on my camel. So now we understand that the word Yehov means a burden. So the Pasuk is saying, Hashlech kal Hashem Yehovcha, throw your burden on Hashem, v'hu yechal kalacha and Hashem will take care of you. There's verklach on this from a couple of achronim. There's one from the Vilna Gaon. There's one from I think the Ksav Sofer and others on it that talk about that the idea of it is one of the explanations I think from the Vilna Gaon is that the Chachamim, it's not so much the Chachamim weren't sure what the word Yahav means in the pasuk. They're not sure what is the pasuk telling us. How far should Bitochen and Hashem go? Should it be that you have to make a keli, and then the Eibishter v'racha Hashem alakacha b'chol asher ta'ase, or is it that there can be a case where you don't even have to make a keli, and Hashem will just give bracha to you, and Hashem will take care of whatever you need? So now, when we have this story with Rav Babachana and the Arab, he didn't even have to ask the Arab. The Arab, on his own, volunteers, you can put your load on my camel. So now we understand from that in the pasuk also, David HaMelech is telling us the same thing. You don't always have to make a keli. You don't always have to do your hishtadlos for parnasa or for whatever else. depending on your level. You can even have a high enough level of betochen that you don't do anything and Hashem does it all for you. Behu yachal kalacha, and he'll take care of you. Okay. Mishnah says, getting back to the shofar, shofar shal Rosh Hashanah, the shofar that you should use on Rosh Hashanah, shal yoel, should be made of a horn of a yoel. Rashi translates yoel as steinbok, which is a wild goat or a mountain goat or something. Tosfos brings from the Aruch that it means a female sheep, which is usually the rams, the male sheep, have curved horns, but the female sheep have straighter ones. Tosfos points out that since you have the posif in Borchi Nafshi, Horim Agvoyim La Ya'elim, the high mountains are the place where the Ya'elim live, that's more mashma like Rashi's explanation that it means a wild goat, because the female sheep don't live up in the mountains. Anyway, so it's Shoyoel, Poshut, and should be a straight horn. Upiv, it's straighter, it's not as tightly curved as the horn of a ram. Upiv mitzupa zahav, the mouthpiece of it is plated with gold. Now we're not talking about everywhere in the world, we're talking specifically when they blew the shofar in the Bis Mikdash on Rosh Hashanah. The mouthpiece was plated with gold. We're gonna see in the Gemara tomorrow about Hashem, we don't mean where you put your mouth, that would make it possible, we mean near there. But it was plated with gold near the mouthpiece to make it more beautiful. And they had two koyanim blowing chatzotzos standing at the sides. So you had one person blowing the shofar in the middle on Rosh Hashanah in the Bis Mikdash and on Yom Kippur of Yovel, and two chatzotzos, one on each side. Shofar marich, the shofar would make the sound longer. The chatzotzos makatzos, the chatzotzos would make the sound shorter. So in other words, when it came to blowing a tekiah, let's say for example, they'd all start blowing together. Then the people blowing the chatzotzos would stop, and this person blowing the shofar would continue blowing the tekiah so that you hear the tekiah of the shofar by itself. Shemitzvah sayem b'shofar, because the primary mitzvah of the day is to hear the shofar. So the chatzotzos are there in order to beautify it, as we're going to learn in the pasuk, as we're going to learn from a pasuk we're going to talk about in the Gemara tomorrow, but nevertheless, you still had to hear the shofar after the chatzotzos. On the other hand, when they have fast days, when they would also blow, we're not talking about fast days like Asar B'Tavis and the rest of those. We learned before that when the B'Smithers were standing, they would, those days were Yom Tov. We were talking about fasts that they'd have for rain or epidemics or other kinds of problems like that. So then the Torah tells us, that you have to blow the Chatzotzos, So on Tanias, the kind of shofar they would use is the shofar tzchorim kupin. They would use shofars made of ram's horns that are more curved. Or pied mitzupa ketef, the mouthpiece, or again near the mouthpiece, would be plated with silver because the taniyas are less important than Rosh Hashanah. Ushtei chatzotzos b'emtza, you had two chatzotzos in the middle, meaning that you had two people blowing shofar on the side and two people in the middle blowing the chatzotzos. There it was the other way around. Shofar makatzav v'chatzotzos ma'arichas. The shofar would blow each sound, the tekiah and the trua and so forth, would blow it short. V'chatzotzos ma'arichas, and then the chatzotzos would continue blowing after that. Shemitzvah sayim v'chatzotzos, because the mitzvah of the day on a fast day is to hear the chatzotzos. Now, this was talking about Rosh Hashanah and Tanias. Now, we said before that there's another time when you also blow a shofar, when there's also a mitzvah to hear a shofar, namely Yom Kippur of Yovel. So the Mishnah says, Shava HaYovel, Rosh Hashanah, L'Tekiah V'Lebrachas. Yovel is identical to Rosh Hashanah as far as the Tekiah, that you have the same, that not only that you have the same pattern of Tekiahs, but also that you use Pshutin, that you also use Shal Yoel Poshut, you use a horn from a Yoel, which is straighter, rather than a horn of a ram, which is more curved. V'Lebrachas, and also that you have to say the same Brachas on Yom Kippur of Yovel as you do on Rosh Hashanah, namely the same nine Brachas. So you'd say the same kind of Shemana Esrei as you do on Rosh Hashanah with Malchias, Zichronis, and Shofar, as you do in Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's not exactly the same. But Rosh Hashanah token b'shol tzchorim, and Rosh Hashanah you use horns of rams that are curved, over Yovelus b'shol Ya'elim, and on Yovel you use ones of a Yoel that are straighter. So according to him, you don't learn the Gzeira Shava throughout. I mean, you use the Gzeira Shava for some purposes because Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you have to learn the Tekiah through a Tekiah from each other. But nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda says we don't learn so far as that it should be the same kind of horn. It's going to be different kinds of horn for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Tosfos, by the way, discusses Are we saying that Rav Yehuda is saying the only one you can use on Rosh Hashanah is a ram's horn, or is we just saying that that's the preferable one to do? In other words, we had on Amud Aleph the Machloikas of Rav Yosi and the Chachamim, whether one from a cow is kosher. Are we saying that now, according to Rav Yehuda, it's even more restricted? You can't use any on Rosh Hashanah except for the horn of a ram. Or is it that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that's the preferable one to use, but you could use ones from any other animal as well, except for a cow, because he agrees with the Chachamim? So Tosfos discusses that at some length over here and concludes, and most of the Rishonim also conclude, that it means that Rabbi Yehuda is only saying lachatchila, if you don't have, you can use a horn of any kind of animal. The Rambam actually writes in Hilchos Shofar that a horn of anything other than from a sheep is posel, and the Ravid and most other Rishonim disagree with him. What do you mean posel? You're saying over here that it's the thing to do, but not that it should be posel any other kind. So some of the Mephoshim friend for the Rambam, he says that maybe when he says kvasim, he means to it that it, with that he includes also Ye'elim and various other related species. So it's interesting. So most people do have the minhag. We do on Rosh Hashanah. We do use a horn of a ram. For one thing, we learned previously in the Gemara that it helped, that it reminds us of Akedas Yitzchak. So that's a good reason to use it. The Teimonim, it's interesting. The Teimonim usually follow the Rambam, but in this, most of them don't. They actually use a horn. You've seen those long Yemenite shofars. They're made of a horn of a creature called a kudu, which have these long spiral shaped horns. So Lechora, according to the simple reading of the Rambam, those wouldn't be kosher because they're not from Kvasim. But again, you have there's a way of answering the Rambam that maybe by Kvasim he means a more general category, and he would include those as well. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Lehi, mitzvah shal Rosh Hashanah v'shal Yom Kippurim v'kufin v'shal kol Hashanah v'pshutin. The ideal mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is to use curved horns, like from a ram. And the rest of the year, for example, during Taneisim, is to use straight horns. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? It says in the Mishnah the other way around. The Tanakhama in our Mishnah started by saying that the horn of Rosh Hashanah, the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, should be for a horn of a yael, which is straight. The answer is, Huda Amaki Hai Tana. Rav Levi, it's following the following Tana in a Braisa. The Tanya, Rav Yehuda, remember Rosh Hashanah, not in a Braisa. Yeah, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Based on our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, I remember Rosh Hashanah how you token b'shal scharim kufin, and Rosh Hashanah they would use curved ram's horns over Yevlus b'shal Ya'elim, but on Yevul they would use straight horns. So Rabbi Levi is following that. The Gemara says, "V'leim hilchasek Rabbi Yehuda." Why doesn't he just say straight out the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? And the reason is, "Iyamet hilchasek Rabbi Yehuda." If he had said that, "Have aminah filo shor Yevul nami Rabbi Yehuda spirolei," then he would say he holds like Rabbi Yehuda as far as the shofar of Yevul as well. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah and in the Braisa that the shofar of Yom Kippur of Yevul should be straight. Therefore, Kamash Malan, therefore Rabbi Levi is telling us that no, I hold that both the ones of Rosh Hashanah and the one of Yevul, 7:45 is Shachar. Kamash Malan, therefore Rabbi Levi tells us no. So we have now a third opinion. We have the Tanakhama in our Mishnah who said that both Rosh Hashanah and Yovel, both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur of Yovel, you use shel yoel poshet, a straight horn from a yoel, from a mountain goat. Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah saying that you use a curved one for Rosh Hashanah and a straight one for Yovel. And Rabbi Levi is saying that no, you use curved ones for both. So the Gemara says, v'maikam lefi, what's the underlying machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda? So, Mar Sovar, Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that there's a difference, that on Rosh Hashanah you should use curved ones, and on Yom Kippur of Yovel straight ones, he says, V'Rosh Hashanah kama d'kayif inish daite tfei miley, on Rosh Hashanah, the more a person bends down his das, in other words, like subjugates his das to Hashem, the better, because that's the theme of Rosh Hashanah, is tam l'choni aleichem. There is a different gusa over here, and Rashi seems to have had this gusa without the word daite, that the word is kama d'kayif inish, the more a person bends over. So when a person is bent over and davening on Rosh Hashanah, and he has his head down to the ground, then that's better. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that people have a minhag to daven on Rosh Hashanah more bowed than usual, and that's based on our Gemara over here that we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda takes the view that it's better to do that on Rosh Hashanah, to show that you're completely bottle to Hashem. Or we have a Kippurim. Tama de poshet inish daide tvei maili. Whereas on Yom Kippur, the more you straighten out, you have a pasuk that says nisal avavenu el kapoyim. Let us lift up our hearts into our hands and into the clouds, and then daven to Hashem, v'nashuva ad Hashem. So therefore, so on Rosh Hashanah, then we want curved ones because the person should be bowed down physically and also mentally. On Rosh Hashanah, you want him to straighten up and then be focused on Hashem. So that's one way. Umar Sava, where's the Tanakama hold? But Rosh Hashanah kama de poshet inish daite tfei maili. On the contrary, on Rosh Hashanah, you want a person to be straightening himself up. Nisa lo avenu al kapoyim. Let's lift up our hearts towards Hashem. So therefore, we want to represent that with a straight shofar that goes upward. Over Tani, and Yom Kippur would be the same thing because you have the Gzeder Shava, because they hold that the Gzeder Shava extends to that as well. On the other hand, when it comes to a Tainis, where the main point is, to subjugate yourself to Hashem, so that the Gzeder should be taken away, then the more a person is bent over and the more a person bends his das, the better. Therefore, they say on Tanias, you should be using curved ones. Meanwhile, Rabbi Levi, who's saying that you use curved ones on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, he holds like Rabbi Yehuda as far as that, and then he says the rest of the year you use straight ones because Nisal Oveinu Al Kapoyim. Okay, so again, I mean, the halacha is, most poskim hold, that a shofar of any kind of animal that meets the criteria we said before is kosher. So it can't be from a cow. It has to be naturally hollow. And it can't be from a non-kosher animal. But beyond that, the mitzvah and amokher is to use one from a ram, because again, it reminds us of Akedas Yitzchak, and most kehillahs do that. So like I said before, the one of the mafoshim, I think the El Yerabah lists like six different grades, like the highest grade is a ram, the second highest grade would be from any other animal, and so on and so forth, until you get down to the fifth grade is one from a non-kosher animal where you blow without a bracha, and the sixth one is a horn from a cow, which is completely possible.
Yashikaya, have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Peter.